And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's Just Something I've Noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. Everybody say hello to Wednesday. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing good. Well, another interesting day.
Yeah.
The campaign, the Republican primary campaign has unofficially, it began yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we said the day before, it was the day before was the first shot of DeSantis at Trump, but it officially began yesterday.
Yeah.
That's what I think, just because of the interview that DeSantis did with Piers Morgan. We'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit.
He appears to be running.
Yes. One would think that he is running, even though he is not officially. That's why I said unofficially the primary campaign began.
Yeah.
So, and what a zoo it was yesterday. I mean, the Fox News story now saying that sources have told Fox News, though, there remains a real chance that D.A. Bragg will not indict President Trump.
Hmm.
By the way, that's one of the problems with all the Republicans jumping on this. You know, the Republicans saying, well, Bragg needs to testify before Congress. By the way, one of the legal weaknesses there, Congress has no authority over a local DA at all.
Yeah, that's it's not going to fly. And right. and on what you want to look at his case, the case that he has.
That's not going to happen.
What jurisdiction do you believe you have there?
Right. That's not. And you know, Rand Paul saying he should go into jail. Republicans are jumping the gun before the DA's office has said anything.
Well, this is the problem that and this is, you know, yesterday about this time during the pre-show meeting, I said, you know, what are the chances that Bragg just steps up to the podium and says, well, you know, the grand jury saw this, but no reasonable prosecutor.
Yeah. Well,
and does that move. And it what would it say? Because you look at the, you know, the momentum built by Trump, or, you know, what some believe is the political momentum of the possibility of him being indicted. You know, even Chris Rock joking about it. Are you guys talking to Democrats? Are you guys stupid? You guys want to make sure that, are you trying to ensure that he wins in 24? And it's quite possible that, you know, you float this out there, see where it goes. And then at the end of it and it could be because of the testimony by Costello that Bragg looks at it and says, all right, we don't move on it.
Well, you know, there was when you had Republicans across the board, you know, including Marjorie Taylor Greene saying, don't protest.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like a setup. You know, that was going around with Republicans. This looks like a setup to get Republicans going crazy.
Then he does
nothing. And then you can
exactly
criticize the Republicans.
Yep.
He didn't even charge Trump. And the Republicans are saying he should be in jail. I mean, it shows you the authoritarian fascists of the Republicans. And that's why I think it's wrong for the Republicans to jump the gun until. Look, we talk show hosts can speculate because Trump said it. And then you had analysis of what the legal case would be. And that's what, You know, and that's what we hit on it and said we just believe it would be very weak. And then with Costello's testimony the other day before the grand jury, we said extremely, you know, it would be extremely weak to do something like this. But, you know, Rand Paul comes out yesterday and says he should be in jail. Mm-hmm. You know, he needs to testify before Congress. This is, well, if he does nothing, you come out looking like idiots. It's very important not to let yourself be set up when the facts are not yet known. And you always are vulnerable to setting yourself up when the facts are not yet known and everybody is dealing in speculation.
Right.
Now, if he does indict Trump, pound away mm-hmm. at that point. Mm-hmm. But if he pulls back now and doesn't do it, he'll come out and say, I never said anything. You know, Trump jumped the gun and Republicans jumped the gun and we were simply going through the evidence, but it shows you what the Republicans are. When the facts aren't present, you know, they're backing a president who's, and because I know that this is what they'll do, that is promoting the fact that there needs to be violent protest, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they'll do. There mm-hmm. needs to be violent protest for something that you know, we didn't even do. And then Republicans said, jail me, and understand the fascists that Republicans are. Mm-hmm. Republicans, don't be stupid. When it happens, you know, yeah, do it. But if he pulls back now, if he doesn't pull back, well, then you're okay. Mm-hmm. But you're taking an unnecessary gamble by jumping the gun when the DA hasn't done anything yet. By the way, just to clarify, I saw in the New York Post yesterday, because we were talking about if the possible charges you could file against Trump and the statute of limitation, challenges there. New York Post yesterday had that because of COVID, number one, statute of limitations for that, you know, basically a year, because a lot of courts were closed and everything else. Mm-hmm. So you got the state got an extra year there of it. But according to New York law, because when Trump became president and was gone for 4 years from New York, that extended it out 4 years. Apparently, if you leave, according to the New York Post, they had a story on it yesterday. Mm-hmm. If you leave the state, that extends, however long you're gone, that extends the statute of limitations.
Even though he still had an office in the state?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because he was living, he wasn't living there anymore. You know, did his I'm assuming, didn't he move officially to Florida to avoid taxes?
But that was before this whole thing. I think he moved to Mar-a-Lago officially.
That'd be a good case. That's the thing. There's so much speculation on everything here. You know, mm-hmm. you and I've gone it and, you know, said, well, this is what this person says, and this is the way it is here. And then we've had to reverse it because new information has come out. Well, that's not the way that it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're reporting the sources that saying it. But they said because he became president, he was then in Washington and Florida. And that, you know, those are the reasons. Let's put it this way. Those are the reasons you can extend it.
Yeah.
The statute of limitations. Mm-hmm. What the specifics are about Trump's situation, about where he officially has his residence during that time would be another.
Yeah, because I would wonder about, okay, what about anybody else who doesn't have any residence whatsoever in New York but commits a crime in New York? Are you saying that statute of limitations is...
Yeah.
And it was because they don't live there? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just telling you what they wrote.
Yeah.
So where do you go here? You know, and there was another story that Trump is going to be arraigned tomorrow or what. It's like, well, or the indictment will be tomorrow.
But he won't appear until next week.
Yeah, exactly. And but there's no evidence of that. Then Fox coming out with the story that, well, there's here it is. Sources told Fox News there remains a real chance that Bragg does not choose to indict Trump.
Yeah.
From yesterday. So, you know, where are we here?
Here's the thing. The Hillary camp will tell you that James Comey wrecked her campaign just by stepping up and saying what he said on July 5th of that year.
Mm-hmm.
That it didn't matter that he didn't move to indict. Everything that he lined out did the damage to the campaign on that day. And that they're claiming that, all right, but that, you know, that the Hillary campaign, we didn't do those things. That wasn't against the law or whatever. They're, you know, they're claiming their innocence, and they never had an official setting in which to defend their innocence. That Comey just came out and laid it down. And even though he did the whole no reasonable prosecutor thing, it wrecked her chances. It wrecked her campaign. That's the claim. Could you see Bragg step up to the, and I guess, you know, just throw this possibility out. He steps up to the podium. Here's what they found in the grand jury. Here's a number of things that went wrong. And then he just brings the whole Stormy Daniels thing back to the surface. Now, if I'm going to have to lay a dollar down on whether he moves or just steps up to the podium and says he did all these things, but we don't believe we can bring a case because we don't believe there's strong enough evidence. Whether he indicts or not, if I'm going to lay my money down, I'm putting a dollar on he indicts. That if they took all this time, they made all this effort, they went through all of that, then that's going to be the case. Now, what sets that off, what really takes a lot of steam out of that, is Costello. Because you have to ask yourself why a guy would risk lying to a grand jury, coming forward in a very deliberate and voluntary way, to testify to a grand jury. Because the hope of, I don't know, being employed by Trump in the future isn't enough if that employment isn't going to be anything. If you're caught lying to a grand jury, you go to jail, you're disbarred. He risks everything, Costello does, by lying to a grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't forced to be there. It was quite the opposite. He insisted on being there. So you have to ask yourself what the motive is for him to do that. What the motive would be for him to lie, there is none. And so that's what it comes down to for me, is that if anything, if there's any reason for Bragg not to move forward, it would be because Costello, what Costello told the grand jury. It could also be that the grand jury has changed since Costello, and that they don't recommend to Bragg an indictment because of Costello's testimony. These are all possibilities. I'm not saying one or the other. But Costello's, the fact that he went there and risked everything, his entire career and livelihood, to be there, if he were lying, tells me there's
okay. Here,
it's likely here, that he didn't lie.
Here's the question I have about Bragg, because you were saying, because you know grand juries are different where whatever state that you're in,
mm-hmm.
and I was wondering, okay, you know what are the rules for a New York grand jury? Can the prosecutor come out and say, here's what we did in the grand jury,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like he can't. Grand jurors must preserve the secrecy of the grand. Because my point is, I know during the time they can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Can they talk about it? You know, can they talk about it? After in the future would be my question.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know if this is a definitive answer. Grant, this is actually from the grand jury handbook of New York State. Grand jurors must preserve the secrecy of the grand jury proceedings. Grand jurors may not discuss anything that occurs in the grand jury room with anyone other than members of the jury, the prosecutor, or the judge. If necessary, any discussion about the case by grand jurors must occur only in the grand jury room. When proposing questions for a witness, grand jurors should take care not to reveal the identity of another witness, the substance of another witness's testimony, or the evidence that they have heard from them. Grand jurors may not tell others anything about any action the grand jury takes. Unlike others involved with the grand jury, witnesses are not required to keep the role secret. Mm-hmm. Grand jury witnesses are allowed to discuss their own testimony in public if they wish to do so. Anyone other than a witness who violates the secrecy of the grand jury is subject to serious penalties, including imprisonment. No one may talk to a grand juror about the grand jury's work. A grand juror should immediately inform the jury staff, grand jury warden. Now, is that just while the grand jury is going on? That's what I don't know.
Are you asking whether or not the prosecutor can talk about it?
Yes.
Oh, I think he can after it's done.
Yeah.
I don't think he can during the process, though.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the case. I'm looking for in the future whether they can or not. And I don't know. It doesn't talk about the future. That would be the case. You know, I don't see here what says once the grand jury ends, anybody can talk about what happened in there. I don't see in the grand jurors.
Well, yeah, but the prosecutor would be the exception, certainly, to that rule after they've convened.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the case. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing then is, you know, when Comey did it, he wasn't a grand jury. Mm-hmm. He's simply an investigator. And mm-hmm. they said he shouldn't have done that, that broke mm-hmm. protocol, mm-hmm. that you don't do that.
Well, we learned about the one case, and I forget the person who died. I forget the name of the person who died, but we learned all about the grand jury after that. And it was through, a lot of that information came through the prosecutor's office. It was after they convened.
I guess it depends. Like I said, it depends on the state. Grand jury rules
that was
are
in
different
New York.
Every state.
Yeah, that was in New York.
For what case?
I'll have to go back and look at it. We talked about the case numerous times on the air. But we talked about what went down, how many grand jurors there were, and essentially the fact that they didn't bring that, and the prosecutor had talked about the grand jury, because the media turns to the prosecutor.
Well, talking about the specifics about what the target did mm-hmm. as fact, I think, you can talk about the generalities of the grand jury, mm-hmm. but it's the specific allegation. Here's what was done. Here's what we believe. To basically indict him in public based on a grand jury is, I think, the legal problem in some states. I don't know whether that's the case in New York, though.
Yeah. I guess we'll find out soon enough.
866-90-RED-EYE.
It's not always easy to spring back from the harsh days of winter to warmer months ahead. From de-icing chemicals to hidden debris underneath snow and ice, winter conditions can do serious damage to your truck. Here's a must-do maintenance check to help you minimize downtime and stay rolling. Make sure your fluids are at proper levels ahead of spring. Fluid is to trucks what blood is to the human body. Low fluid can be just as harmful as no fluid, and the damage this will cause to your truck is unavoidable. Pay attention to your engine oil, coolant levels, power steering fluid, transmission fluid, brake fluid, and differential fluid. This report is brought to you by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6 and help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harding. I'm Gary McNamara, 86690 Red Eye, to just give everybody an idea how grand juries in different states can be different. In New York, the witnesses, because when he gave his testimony saying that Michael Cohen was lying, he is a witness. You are allowed. A witness is able to talk about their testimony. But in the state of Texas, you're not.
Right. But I was surprised that in New York they let witnesses talk about while the grand jury was still in session.
Witnesses called to testify before a Texas grand jury must keep the proceeding secret, as spelled out in the criminal code of procedure. If secrecy is violated, the witness may be found in contempt and fined $500 and imprisoned up to 6 months in the state of Texas. So, like I said, it's different. So that's the question, if you say, what would Bragg do if he didn't indict? Would he still go after Trump like Comey did? That would be the question. And I don't have the answer. I don't know whether you can talk about what the witness testimony was. If you're the DA,
well,
after the grand jury is done, I don't know what the rules are in New York.
I don't think he would have to go that far. I think he could step up and say, we believe there was criminal wrongdoing. However, we don't have the sufficient case to bring it forward or blah, 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 blah. You know, he doesn't even have to go that far.
No, you're right. Yeah.
That's all he has to do is bring up again the Stormy Daniels thing all over again and let it live for a few minutes longer. You know? And that could be enough for Bragg. And then, again, make the Republicans who were saying he should be arrested or he should have to testify make them look bad.
Or you simply say, look, we believe criminal wrongdoing was there. The grand jury didn't see it.
Right.
And then you absolve yourself.
We're not going to pursue it at this time. Right. Yeah.
Call in and get a word in edgewise. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye if you'd like to get in. Oh, and it was good to see you again because we had talked yesterday. And we were pretty shocked that there wasn't more analysis on yesterday's show about, Costello's testimony. And then we brought up that the waiver that Cohen didn't remember, said never happened, that he never signed a waiver, and there's on Fox News there's Costello, showing the actual waiver that existed, and said, hey, the
attorney-client privilege waiver.
The attorney-client privilege waiver. And it's just a couple of sentences from Jonathan Turley, because when I woke up this morning, I went, there it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Because yesterday I ran a column in USA Today about the unpalatable prospect of Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg putting disbarred attorney Michael Cohen on the stand as his star witness. Given Cohen's past lies and conduct, it will be a target-rich environment for cross-examination. As if on cue, Cohen added another potential item for a withering cross-examination. He denied any memory of a waiver of attorney-client privilege in the public tiff with Robert Costello. And we said, well, that destroys the credibility of Cohen.
Yeah.
And he said, when I heard that Costello had asked, this is Jonathan Turley, when I heard that he had asked to speak before the grand jury, I was highly critical. As a criminal defense attorney, a public confrontation with a former client, particularly in claiming possible perjury on his part, is unheard of. It's rare for an attorney to contradict a former client in public, let alone launch such a frontal attack on his character, putting aside the propriety of such a move. The violation of the confidentiality in such a case could result in bar charges, as we talked about before.
Right.
If he did this,
why would you risk all that?
Right? Why would Costello do it? However, Costello then claimed to have a signed waiver of attorney-client privilege. Cohen then took the step of going on television to blast Costello. While prosecutors would likely prefer that he avoid public interviews, Cohen has been maximizing his exposure on the legal matter, a signature throughout his career. He went on the Joy Reid show to denounce Costello with no sense of self-awareness. I'm glad somebody else is using that, because we use that term a lot. With no sense of self-awareness, he accused Costello of lacking any sense of veracity. But then he added that, "I didn't know Bob Costello from a hole in the wall," and then Costello was never my lawyer. On the waiver, Cohen denied any recollection of waiving the privilege and said, "I'd like to know when, where, how, and where." Costello then went on Tucker Carlson show on Fox News and held up a signed waiver that he said has Cohen's signature on the second page. Wow. He said, "I still find this dogfight between two lawyers to be unseemly. However, unless Costello is a forger."
Yeah, right. Well, no, I mean, think about that, that what he would have to go through all of that. So then not only did he lie to a grand jury, but he also forged a signature on a document.
Yes.
To help facilitate those lies to a grand jury.
That Cohen just added another alleged false statement on the eve of the Trump prosecution. If that is his signature, his denial can only be used to show a spotty memory of important legal details, equally damaging his own lack of veracity. So that he says, for Cohen, it is nothing new, but how would you like to be a prosecutor with your star witness adding rebuttal points on national television for the defense?
Okay.
Which is why we said yesterday, why isn't there anything being written on the fact of Costello's testimony is so incredibly damaging to the prosecution? We said, we can't see how he could possibly continue on this without being legally completely embarrassed. If the parameters of what we know, of what the legal experts say, is what Bragg is going after. Bragg may be going after someone else.
Yeah,
but if those are the parameters of what he is hitting, it's just horrible. And then to see the Fox News thing today, sources say there's a great chance that he may not prosecute Trump. And we're like, okay, that sort of makes more sense.
Well, it could be because of the whole Costello thing. It could be because of that testimony. Maybe that testimony changed something for Bragg. And not that Bragg doesn't want to go forward, but that he looks at it as a major hurdle now that Costello would be a star witness.
Right, or the grand jury. I mean, we have people writing us for some reason saying, well, the grand jury indicts, not the prosecutor.
Yeah, they recommend.
We know
they're the ones that hand down the indictment.
Right, we know
but
that.
But it's, you know, but this is the, you know, this is the approach here is, and this is why someone like a Bragg hands it to a grand jury. So that politically they can kind of be somewhat removed from the process. Now, he clearly isn't. You don't get to wash your hands of it because you sent it to a grand jury. But this is how it's done. And I could see, where they look at it and say, well, there's no way around the Costello thing.
No, there isn't. And I'm still amazed. Turley talked about it. I'm still amazed that wasn't a bigger issue yesterday on this whole thing.
Well, because then you say, all right, the prosecution moves forward. They go to court. Costello has already shown that he is willing to testify. He would be a star witness for the defense.
Right.
Their star witness is a guy who can't even remember what he has signed, apparently. A guy who has, according to all of the cases before this against him, he's broken the law numerous times. He's a guy with zero credibility. He would be destroyed, eviscerated on the stands. You want that?
And the other thing is, I thought yesterday, if Costello is a forger, I mean, the Bar Association, I'm sure, would want to see, you know, that signed.
Yeah.
You know, that, oh, that, yeah. That, no. that signed waiver, because that right. would be the criticism.
Well, there would be, I would think there would be a hearing, because right. if Costello is, if Cohen is saying he never signed anything, I don't remember it, then certainly they would move to say, well, that wasn't the case, and we need to prove it. So I would think there would be a hearing to determine whether or not attorney-client privilege was ever waived. But think about this. Here's the question about Bragg. Because Bragg is going to be the one that moves forward on this. What would you rather have? A situation where you can come out and you can say, look, we believe he broke the law. Grand jury didn't find it. But you should know that, you know, we will, at this point, we're not going to prosecute. We're not going to move forward with this case for now. You leave it dangling. Or would you rather go through this, be destroyed in court by Trump? What's worse for Bragg?
Being destroyed by Trump.
Being destroyed by Donald Trump. And, on his own turf.
And the politics of this is, when you have CNN, when you have MSNBC saying this is an extremely weak case, where they can't defend it and say, this is a solid case.
They can't find one expert for their shows.
Right.
I didn't see them bring one expert that said, oh, no, Bragg has this, and if he can do this, then it's going to be boom, boom, right. boom, and Trump goes down. Nobody is saying that. And so Bragg could lose big time to Donald Trump on his own turf. Do you want that? That would be Bragg's signature. This would be Bragg's signature move if he were able to prosecute a former president, right. successfully prosecute a former president and convict a former president. That would be one thing, but that's an Everest of a thing to accomplish, mm-hmm. especially on a weak case. You've really got nothing right. here. And so what's worse is this could also be your signature move in the worst way, in that you lose to Donald Trump on your own turf.
Now, we have to also ask the question, though, does Bragg have any sense of self-awareness, since he is the DA that came out and initially said that they were not going to make it a felony if you went in and robbed they had a lot of the bodega robberies.
Mm-hmm.
You go in and you rob a store, and, you know, you take a real gun in, and you pointed at somebody's head, and you robbed the store. Well, they wouldn't make that a felony as long as you don't shoot the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of self-awareness. So with somebody as delusional as Bragg, you don't know what he would do, but obviously the politics of losing for Trump, no matter how delusional Bragg has shown he can be, is still worse for him.
Yeah, it would be.
He may not recognize it.
Yeah, it would be the one that basically, I mean, you would be forever defeated by Trump. And that would be your legacy. And, you know, he may not see that. He may be just as delusional as he seems. And he may decide to go forward with it. You know, the story coming out that it will happen sometime today, Wednesday. Well, you know, it's out there for days that it was going to happen Tuesday. Now, Andrew McCarthy wrote last week also that, I think he wrote as early as Friday, that he thought it would happen sometime this week. So we'll see.
What I like is the story, and I believe the New York Post had it, about the joy inside that the Trump camp has decided to embrace this. That Trump actually wants to be handcuffed. He wants it. He wants everything to be on camera.
Yeah.
That they view this as something that, and he's one of the few political candidates that have existed in history where bad news, they believe, is great news.
Well, no, we said it. You know, during the impeachments, during the second impeachment, I said, look, You know, they think this is going to be a scarlet letter. No. He's going to wear it like a letterman's jacket. He's going to put this on, and that's an accomplishment for him. He'll wear that around all day. So I could see that. I could see him and his lawyer saying, no, come on in while I'm fingerprinted. Come on in. Watch this process. We want complete transparency here. Come on in.
Well, that's and one of the reasons you do that is, you know, it's a horribly weak case.
Right. And that you're setting yourself up for most likely a win in court. Because think about that. If he got a win on this case, if this case did not drag out. And my thought is, because I'm looking at it, you look at the possible charges that could come down. You know, we're not talking about a miles-long list of witnesses, and we're not talking about, you know, warehouses filled with evidence. We're just talking about what probably will come down to a trial that may last weeks, not months. And then an appeal that could happen fairly quickly if it doesn't go his way.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, the Republican primary campaign officially began yesterday. We'll get to the details on it. Piers Morgan doing an interview with DeSantis and asked DeSantis to differentiate himself between, you know, tell the differences between him and Donald Trump, and he did. And the war is going to begin here, so we'll get to that. We'll tell you about the Texas University that canceled a drag show, saying it denigrates women, that it's akin to blackface. You and I talked about this a long time ago and said, well, technically, in the liberal circular firing squad, isn't it gender appropriation?
I would think it would be.
We asked that question years ago.
Yeah, I think it would be.
That the left should be upset about that. But again, the left has decided to abandon women.
Well, I mean, you know, look. They were all, you know, going all crazy in Hollywood several years ago because someone who was not a transgender was pretending as an actor to be a transgender. They were angry that they didn't get a real transgender to pretend to be a transgender.
Oh, the liberal circular firing squad.
It makes my bald spot hurt. It's just, seriously, there is no end.
I've never noticed the bald spot.
Yeah, I don't really have one.
Oh, okay. Just saying.
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when and where you want. If you can't listen live overnight. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning.
Hello.
So there, I mean, it's the funniest thing is This is in the entertainment section. This is page 6, which focuses on celebrities. And article in the New York Post. There's no such thing as bad publicity when you're Donald Trump. Spies tell page 6 that the Donald is in high spirits in advance of a possible arrest and indictment this week. Sources say Trump wants his potential arrest to be a high-profile affair for maximum exposure. A source said the Trump team, of Trump's team, they are very pumped about this. The Manhattan DA, the NYPD, and even the Department of Justice were trying to work out a quiet handover coordinated with the Secret Service, and Trump was having none of it. If an indictment and arrest happens, he wants it to be public. We are even told that Trump's people are planning to try and film and document it with their own camera crew. They want a shot of him in handcuffs,
yeah,
and will release the mugshot. They are loving this stuff. Meanwhile, spies tells page 6 that Trump is at his private club in Palm Beach, Florida, where he's reveling in being back in the news and the center of attention. He thinks this trumped-up charge will help him with his base. Trump is acting as if he doesn't have a care in the world.
Yeah, all right.
The Political Insider further told us Trump and his team are nervous about likely primary rival Governor Ron DeSantis's election prospects and think the arrest would bolster Trump's campaign because they think this will show that the Democrats are out to persecute him. The source also told us Trump will be getting all the media. He will argue he is the leader of the party and has the best shot against President Biden, which is why he is being attacked. His people are licking their chops. They are pumped. Next thing he'll be doing is the rally.
All right.
The Post previously reported that sources said the NYPD and Secret Service are prepping for Trump's possible indictment in Manhattan after the ex-president announced he is expecting to be arrested. So there you go. Source said Trump appears in high spirits and is throwing out positive energy. He's busy rallying members to his side, both on the golf course and in the club's dining room. This is Mar-a-Lago. Wherever he appears, it's a mini campaign rally with people greeting him, surrounding him, and voicing their support. You know, you and I had said this by the time the first and then really the second indictment, we said, wow, you know, the Democrats believe that this will taint him. And we said, actually, it'll be viewed as a badge of honor. Nobody even talks about the fact that he was indicted in any way that is critical. You may get some, well, he was indicted, but they know they can't sell it anymore. But that's because the Democrats, again, did not, I said indictment, impeachment. The Democrats did not, they lowered, as we said, they lowered the bar on impeachment where it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah,
future right. presidents that are impeached,
right.
unless it is a serious crime, I don't know, for, you know, something like tax evasion from influence peddling, you know, things like that.
Yeah, right.
Things that, you know, you'd really never see in any type of, you know, president, you know, accused right. of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Unless it is an extreme criminal charge, really impeachment has, because the Democrats has lost any impact in our political culture.
Right.
And we said if they did it, this is what would happen.
That was, you know, something that everyone seemed back then to lose sight of, that it was on the left, that it was going to diminish its effect. They thought it would be worse than a scarlet letter. No, man, it was a letterman's jacket to the nth. You didn't understand the type of person he is. You went after him with two impeachments that were bogus. Man, he's gonna fly those flags all day. And if he believes Bragg has nothing, which he has nothing, then he's going to, I could absolutely see him playing this up. You know, the one thing about the left is they've been, you know, I'm the victim, I'm the victim, I'm the victim, I'm the underdog, I'm the underdog. Well, Trump has had the left going at him since before day one. I mean, this entire thing. He had the Clinton machine going after him, you know, and it happened all throughout his presidency. The Democrats then, not just once, twice they impeached. And then Bragg comes with this weak case. What do you, how do you think he's going to react?
And with the limited number of polls out there, it looks like it's helped Trump.
Yeah, right. So could that be the sole reason that Bragg decides not to move? And says, well, you know, right now we're not going to move forward on it.
Well, the problem is, and it's well known, and we talked about it the other day, it could definitely help Trump, you know, win the primary. Mm-hmm. It's not going to help him get independence. And we have talked about...
No, in the general election, doesn't work.
It's not going to help him get... This is not going to help him get independence. And mm-hmm. That's the challenge there. And that's what Democrats, you know, and what was it? You say it was Chris Rock, or was it?
Yeah, Chris Rock told the joke, basically saying to Democrats, mm-hmm, yeah, do you guys want him to win?
Yeah, I mean, there's a train of thought out there that it could happen, but there's also the train of thought that all these things coming down on him is not going to help him get one vote from an independent. And if he doesn't win independence, he loses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you and have to win.
That's what Democrats believe. Democrats believe, look, throw everything at him, and the way that he will respond will be the wrong way, and we can beat him because there's no way that Donald Trump can get independence.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the feeling is from Democrats out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It's a long, as we've said, it's a long way away.
And
Biden is right now. This is the thing. Biden is in a weaker position than Trump,
mm-hmm,
based on everything that's coming down the pike over the next year and a half. Unless, you know, they and I don't know. I mean, I still believe that the Georgia case going after him is weak, but I don't know all the testimony in that case.
Right.
It's probably stronger, you know, it's probably a stronger case than the Bragg case, but everything is relative. Just because it's stronger doesn't mean it's still not weak.
Well, and then there's the special prosecutor who's been assigned based on the classified documents, and we'll see where that goes.
But the political problem with that is, you know, nobody really talks much about the Georgia case, the politics of that, because there's a lot of great unknowns. But the problem with the Mar-a-Lago case is that will also be viewed as political.
Yeah, right.
Especially after
Biden.
Right. If you charge Trump and don't charge Biden, you know, that's the politics.
Well, and ABC has this story that, of course, Drudge had to post about, and here it is, the headline. Sources say special counsel claims Trump deliberately misled his attorneys about classified documents, Judge wrote. Okay. I don't know what proof there is of that, but again, you're getting into the weeds on the much bigger picture, and that is classified documents for an ex-president. Compare this to the mishandling of documents and how the whole thing was just botched by Biden. As a former vice president, keep in mind, those documents weren't there from his presidency. With Biden, they were there from the time he was vice president and in the Senate.
Yep.
So we'll see where that special prosecutor goes. But I think Trump looks at all this. I think he looks at the collective likely and says, man, this works for me because it shows the left, everybody on the left is looking to do anything and everything to bring me down. And they've got nothing.
Yeah, the great unknown is how the public will view, and remember, it's the next year and a half. how the public is going to view, and, you know, we've seen over the last couple of weeks on influence peddling, Chinese and Russian money going to the current president.
Yeah.
When he was vice president, you know, and then after, you know, what is that all about?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, yeah. Because one thing the public hates, you know, does the public care more about Trump and Stormy Daniels or influence peddling that enriched the president's family when he was vice president and after? You know, what is more of a concern to the American public when you get down to it, and you pound it for a year, because it still hasn't been pounded by the Republicans yet. I mean, the ads haven't been out there yet.
Mm-hmm.
You run ads every day. Can you say, this president is compromised. He got hundreds of millions of dollars from anonymous Chinese sources. Ask yourself why. You run those. You pound those. You know, Russian oligarchs. You know, Russian oligarchs were sanctioned after Putin invaded Ukraine. The two that weren't are the ones that donated and enriched the Biden family with whatever, I don't know what the amounts of money are, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself, is this president compromised by Russia, by
right.
Putin?
Right.
You do that. And you know, those will be extremely effective. And since everybody knows the president's lying about it, and since the public already believes that the Biden family in the polls stated now that the Biden family has enriched itself, I don't know how that's going to come out. Because people ask me all the time, well, what do you think is going to happen? I don't know what's going to happen. There's too many variables out there.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Surviving and thriving as an owner-operator has just as much to do with managing costs as it does with generating revenue. Understanding basic principles of operating costs can save you thousands of dollars a year. Costs are not the same each month. If 9,600 miles are driven one month and 10,000 miles the next, two different sets of costs apply for each month. For example, if your tractor payment is $1,850 per month and you drive 9,600 miles in the month, your tractor payment is costing you 19.3 cents per mile. Drive 10,000 miles, though, and that same payment will cost you 18.5 cents per mile. This is one of your major fixed costs while paying off a truck loan. The difference in this example is only a fraction of a cent, which may seem like small change, but it ultimately amounts to $960 more annually on the bottom line. Because though fixed costs do not go down over time, you can reduce your cost per mile with more paid miles. Owner-Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, the unofficial primary campaign for the GOP unofficially began yesterday. We'll get to that. But talking about, looking at right now the election and everything else, and we had talked about, you know, Trump and, you know, the Stormy Daniels thing, and comparing it, if he won the nomination, comparing it to the Biden situation, the problem Biden has, for example, with the possible criminal wrongdoing for influence peddling, or just finding out more about how his family has been enriched over the next year and a half. And the other problem that he has outside of the personal things that they are involved in, the one thing that is going to hang around the president's neck like an albatross is inflation.
Yeah.
Because still there is nothing. Nobody's talking about the fact. I haven't seen a projection now. You seen a new updated projection yet about what inflation will be like a year from now?
Oh, my gosh, no.
Has that been, because of everything that's just happened, has that been, I expect the next one to move it off. Well, we're going to move this up to 2025. Think about that. And also the effect that might have a year from now, if we keep on this inflation path with prices, there really hasn't been, when you and I have talked about how inflation is viewed as a percentage and not the actual dollars of the increase in what's going up. And we've talked about the fact, because it's very important for people to understand, that the government will attempt to BS you and say, well, inflation is coming down, well, inflation's going up. The rate may be coming down, but understand that the 6%, if you see 6% inflation from last year, and you look at last year, understand that they take it year to year, so that 6% inflation is on top of already an increased 7% inflation from a year ago.
Yeah.
From the year preceding that. Yep. And so when you're talking about prices are constantly going up. So as the Biden administration keeps telling you things are getting better and you're getting relief and you're not, and that goes on for another year and a half, that's good. I can't fathom how, I don't know, but it's not going to be a positive for Biden. But it also may be, because you've got Trump supporters saying, well, look, Trump's a shoo-in because of the numbers right now. Hmm. Well, we'll talk about what it looks like, the campaign that DeSantis is going to hit on him for the next year. And it'll be a year when we're into the primary season at this particular point. And with inflation hitting Republicans,
yeah,
will Republicans say, well, okay, Trump was okay. Remember, a year is a long time. We need a guy who can get the job done, because that's what DeSantis is running on. I can get the job done, no drama. And I've proved I can get the job done.
Yeah.
And we've got record support. I'm a conservative. I get the job done. There's no drama. What he's saying to people is, I'm an adult. I'm not a child who gets involved in drama. That's the message. I don't believe it's effective right now. Will it be effective 6 months from now? But more importantly, will that message be effective a year from now if there's the back and forth between what Trump is undergoing and his outburst? Will that, as we move closer, inflation continues to go up, will that affect Republicans a year from now, would be the question to ask.
Well,
and then how would it affect the general?
He's different than both other major candidates on the left and the right, because Biden has a lot of drama in his own right. You know, you look at the drama that Biden brings, and of course all the problems that he's created, but the behavior of the individual and the belief, whether people believe a DeSantis could essentially come in and do the job and remove the drama from the White House. Now, the left is going to throw everything at him. It doesn't matter what who it is on the right. There's going to be plenty of drama, and the left is going to make sure of that. It's whether or not you engage.
Whether you participate in the drama.
Yep. If you engage, then you become part of it. And that's exactly part of the point for the left. They want you to engage. Well, and I guess we'll see. It's expected that the Fed will move a quarter of a point later today. That puts us at a target rate of Fed target rate of 4.75 to 5, which means they're not serious about inflation. That means inflation is going to be significant, likely for the next year or two.
McNamara and Eric Harley taking your calls. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you want to chat. So, thinking yesterday, Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley.
And I'm sorry, who?
that's the point. I mean, he's every single day.
Yeah.
You know, he will be on social media. I follow him on Twitter. And every single day, he's making great points.
He has been for a long time. Yeah.
Every interview he does, people say, "We like what you're talking about."
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's going nowhere.
Right.
In every campaign, you have to separate yourself from the
pack,
the front runner.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to separate yourself. You have to eventually separate yourself and say, "You need to vote for me because not just my ideas, but I can win because."
Here's why I'm a better choice than the person that right now is out front.
You eventually have to, Ramaswamy and Haley eventually have to attack Trump, and they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just politics. You have to, and I mean attack in a way where you're differentiating yourself from them. This is why I'm different from him.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's like, well, why are you running?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got DeSantis, we've got Trump. Ideologically speaking, on the issues, Trump and DeSantis agree, what, probably on 95% of things?
Mm-hmm.
They agree, Ramaswamy probably agrees with them on 95% of things. Nikki Haley agrees with them on 95% of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so why should you run? And that's why, you know, Nikki Haley and Ramaswamy, you know, if the day they attack Trump, boom, they're in the news. But then Trump attacks back.
Yeah, right.
And so Trump really hasn't gone after either of those because he doesn't view either of those candidates as a challenge. He's going after DeSantis and has gone after DeSantis because he views DeSantis as a challenge. Now, we've asked whether it would be effective or not. You saw the other day the shot that he was trying to imply that DeSantis was gay.
No, I didn't see that one.
Oh, yeah, where he said, wait till the Democrats come after you about a woman or a man in your past life, basically.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, like a sexual harassment thing. Wait till the media comes out. I'm paraphrasing you, but he said a man. And it was like, he's implying that DeSantis is gay. That was the thing.
Okay. All right.
that he threw out. And so it's like the question is, you know, how is DeSantis going to run against Trump? Mm-hmm. You eventually have to attack the power base, and the big power base is Trump. He still has the advantage. He still has the numbers in the polling. Now, so it was interesting yesterday, and he had talked about the fact when he talked to Piers Morgan. Again, that interview I think is going to be on Thursday.
On News
Nation.
Yeah.
So we only have, you know, partial transcripts of it.
Right.
But it seems like what he's doing is saying, I'm not running against Trump. Because he said, I'm running against, you know, he said, look, I'm going to show the people that, you know, that I'm the one that can beat, you know, that I'm running against Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you why I can beat Biden.
Mm.
And so he never, it doesn't seem like unless he's asked the question, he doesn't go after Trump.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is that the philosophy? You only go after Trump when people ask you, what's the difference between you and Trump? And then you can say, somebody asked me, what's the difference? I have to tell them the difference. But, I'm going to run by telling you how I can beat Biden, implying, putting that seed into people's head, I can beat Biden, Trump can't.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know how long he can walk that tightrope. But I want to get to hear where he says it says Florida Governor Ron DeSantis cast himself as a pragmatic leader whose no-nonsense style could propel him to the White House, dismissing former President Trump's recent criticisms as nothing more than background noise that isn't worth engaging. In terms of my approach to leadership, personnel in government who have the agenda of the people and share our agenda. You bring your own agenda in, you're gone. We're just not going to have that, DeSantis said, as Morgan detailed in a preview of the interview in the New York Post. So the way we run the government, I think, is no daily drama. Focus on the big picture, put points on the board. And I think that's something that is very important. Now, you know that when he was asked a question the other day about Trump, the Trump campaign was furious about it and attacked him back for it. When DeSantis says, I don't know what goes into pain, even though he attacked Bragg and said, you know, this is all political. He said, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I just can't speak to that. Well, he did speak to it.
By not speaking
about it.
Yeah.
DeSantis doubled down on those comments in the interview with Morgan. This is Fox analysis of it from the New York Post article. Well, there's a lot of speculation about what the underlying conduct is, that it is purported to be it. And the reality is that it's just outside my wheelhouse. I'm not going to comment. I mean, it's just not something that I can speak to. He also told Morgan, at the end of the day, as a leader, you really want to look to people like our founding fathers, like what type of character. It's not saying that you don't ever make a mistake in your personal life, but I think what type of character are you bringing? So somebody who really set the standard is George Washington, because he always put the Republic over his own personal interest. When we won the American Revolution, Washington surrendered his sword. I'm trying to think of what else... DeSantis dismissed the name calling as background noise, telling Morgan that it's not important for me to be fighting with people on social media. I don't know how to spell the sanctimonious one. I don't really know what it means, but I kind of like it. It's long. It's got a lot of vowels. We'll go with that. That's fine. I mean, you can call me whatever you want, just as long as you can also call me a winner, because that's what we've been able to do in Florida, is put a lot of points on the board and really take this state to the next level. So there you go.
Well, you know, he's right on that. And really the question is, all right, can he do that outside of Florida? Can he lead a nation, not just a state? And a lot of it is going to be about, I think, about the behavior of the individuals involved. Biden is defiant at every turn. And now he's defiant, I believe, internally. I think with his own people, he's being defiant. And these are the things that you have to look at with the general election. But in order to get there, you have to get around Trump. And if Trump is indicted, here's my question. What if he's indicted more than once? What if Bragg indicts and then the Georgia indictment comes down later this year?
It's a possibility.
And, you know, again, how does it weigh on the voter? You know, there's something to be said about like the Mar-a-Lago raid and the 2 weeks following, the fundraising was crazy for Trump. But it didn't last. And the question is, why not? Well, a couple of things there. Because the message coming from the Trump camp was inconsistent about the documents. Now, all of that was a wash once they found the documents at the University of Pennsylvania office of Biden. When they found started finding the documents of Biden, everything about Mar-a-Lago was, oh, what? What?
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yep. Yeah. Oh, I seem to remember something about Trump having documents, too.
Well, I think it was brought up by some Democrats. Well, Obama was right in his analysis of Trump.
Yeah.
Because it's like Democrats are riding high. Oh, this is a slam dunk. And then Biden and then comes Biden. Along.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's it. It is whether or not you can, you know, because any indictment that comes down on the classified documents from the special prosecutor is just going to be laughable. Especially following the Biden document thing, which I suggest is still not, in fact, is far from over. Then you look at the Bragg case. It's about as empty as it gets. Then what do you have? You have Georgia. And that, you know, the question there, how far could that case go? Is that just another empty case? I think the Trump camp looks at it collectively and says, man, it looks like everybody's coming after me and doing it in a purely political
way. Right.
Way.
Right.
And it's just, you know, great for us because it really positions us as the underdog. But that can only go on for so long. And that will only go so far.
And when you look at DeSantis, because obviously you see what DeSantis is you know, did yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get involved in the name calling, and then the reporters will ask you, "What do you think about the name calling?" Well, it's interesting. I mean, I guess, but you know, we don't deal in that drama every day. We deal in what we can do, and we wish to talk about the issues and the successes in Florida. And his goal is to pound over and over again, "We're not about the drama. We're not about the drama. We're about results, not drama." There is no other way for him to go, DeSantis. I mean, if I'm a political consultant, I'm telling him, yeah, you need to ride, you need to walk that tightrope. Mm-hmm. And you have to ask your question a year from now, you know, really, you know, 11 months from now, 10 months from now, when the primary season is kicking off, will the name calling from Trump, I already believe it's not as effective with DeSantis, but he's been doing it for so long. Name calling a Democrat is one thing. Mm-hmm. Name calling a Republican, where Republicans even say, and Trump supporters say, I don't know what that means.
I think the one thing that so far that DeSantis has done is actually disarm it a little bit by bringing up the whole sanctimonious thing.
Well, it's actually brought up by the reporter. He doesn't bring it up. The reporters bring it up.
Right. Well,
he responds. But that's an important...
The fact that he engaged on that and disarmed it is big. Because when you do that, if you can disarm it and laugh at it, if you can laugh it off, it becomes nothing.
Yeah. And if he said,
you react to it and engage as a result of reacting to it, then you've shown, well, he can get to you.
Exactly.
As long as you're laughing it off, you disarm it, and it falls away. If it had any power whatsoever.
Right. Because you're going to be, and DeSantis knows it. Every time Trump says something about him, the media will ask him about it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to bring it up. He doesn't say, Donald Trump said this about me yesterday. Mm-hmm. Oh, he completely ignores it. Until the reporter brings it up, because, well, it seems like your reporters are obsessed with the name calling or whatever. We don't care about the name call. You don't even need to address Trump. You don't even need you can sit there and say, you reporters are just obsessed with the name calling or the drama. We're not involved. You don't never mention Trump's name. You mention the reporter bringing it up, and it's the same effectiveness. We don't deal in that. And again, I don't know. I don't know how effective I believe it's the only way that he can go, because that's the one weakness Trump has. That's the perception of Republicans. I wish he get off the drama. Many Republicans, I wish he get off the drama. I'll support him. And Republicans or Democrats are attacking him unfairly. But I wish he would stop it. I wish he'd stop going down rabbit holes and focus on his accomplishments and what he has done. And for the life of me, we don't know why. So DeSantis, it's the only path to go down, because it is the one weakness that he, I mean, he has more than one weakness, but it's a big one. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, we are Red Eye Radio. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. You can listen to our podcast, which is our show, when and where you want, if you can't listen live overnight. So I was thinking that, because we've been having, I think, and we're going to have some pretty interesting political discussions on, you know, the campaign between DeSantis and as we're talking, the unofficial campaign of DeSantis and the unofficial primary campaign going on right now, which we believe started in the last 36 hours.
Yeah.
But I started thinking to myself during the top of the hour, what would we be talking about? I mean, we would have nothing to talk about if Kamala Harris decided to run against Biden. It's like, okay.
good luck. Let us know how that works out for you. Any advice for them?
Yeah.
Quit.
It's like, wow. you know, I will say this, though. One thing that an attack on the issues, and I do believe it probably is that the DeSantis camp was, I think, probably salivating to hit Trump on this particular issue after Trump initially came out and has attacked DeSantis on his response to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Now you look at it, it's like, okay, let's find the weak spot there for DeSantis and COVID. Well, very early on, he wasn't the first to open back up.
Yeah.
Is that really going to hold a lot of water?
Mm.
No. What did DeSantis, when he asked by Piers Morgan, what would you do different than Trump? I would have fired Fauci. And I went, ooh, that's effective, even if a little unfair, even if unfair, because we didn't find out the majority of what Fauci was doing until after Trump was long gone from office.
Yeah, right.
But there is such a dislike. Is that effective politically? Yeah.
Well, it's especially effective because of what you first mentioned, and that is Trump going after him for, you know, not being the first to reopen or whatever, his mishandling, what Trump calls his mishandling of the whole COVID thing as a governor. But if you're going to do that, if you're going to play in that arena, then that, I could see that being effective to that degree.
Because Fauci is so disliked.
I would also say he could probably, and look, here's the thing. DeSantis is not about to play all of his cards in front of any one person at any one time. I think if he's asked directly about something specific, he'll answer. But I think there are a number of things that he could say. Like, well, you know, when I appoint someone and they're confirmed by the Senate as a cabinet member, I'm going to work with them, but I'm going to have great confidence in them before I nominate them for that position. And this is what I would do different. I'm not going to turn on someone, you know, if I have been the one to seek them out and, you know, the process of the nomination and Senate confirmation. If you can rest assured that if I nominate someone, by the time I nominate them, I have vetted them properly and therefore would have no reason to go after them. We can have our differences even while they're serving in the cabinet if they are confirmed by the Senate, but I wouldn't go as far as what he did with certain cabinet members.
Well, that goes
or
back
people that he's hired.
That goes back to the no drama.
Yeah. Yep.
And then at that point, the message is, I'm an adult trying to solve problems. I'm not trying to get into an argument or go down rabbit holes for the sake of doing it. That is a weakness that every Republican that I've talked to, even the most loyal Trump supporters, understand.
Yeah.
And have acknowledged right. They don't like.
Right.
Everyone I've talked to privately, even if publicly, the most loyal Trump supporters, they understand Trump's weaknesses. And they understand and Republicans who even support Trump privately, they're worried. They believe that he can beat DeSantis.
Mm-hmm.
They have doubts of whether Trump can win the presidency. Because they understand that how does Trump get independents to back him now? He might be able to do it. Or Biden is so bad where independents say, well, the choice between Biden and Trump, we'd rather go with Trump because we agree with him on the issues. And do we want the drama or do we want complete incompetence and babbling and a radical agenda?
Yeah, right.
And so, I mean, that's the, you know, you look at this election here and you don't, you know, the incumbent is so bad. I'm trying to think in American history, modern American history that I've been following, where a poll stated that 75% of the incumbent party don't want them to run.
Right. I don't know. You would have to show me. I would be surprised to learn if that's ever been the case in modern times.
Yeah. And you cannot understate the weakness of Biden and the fact that there's still another year and a half until we're seriously in that election season.
Yeah. Right.
And that's a year and a half of inflation, a year and a half of more insanity. Look, we believe that the things that he did over the last couple of months, he did because he's being told he needs to move to the center. And I don't know if he's getting upset at his new chief of staff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was said that since Klain is gone, he seems to be moving to the center. Mm-hmm. But then again, he didn't move to the center. Because, well, he, you know, because there was a criticism from the left, you know, why is he allowing some Alaska drilling? Well, what the White House focused on is he didn't. There was nothing he could do about it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't take that as a, they may have initially wanted to take that as a victory, believing that they could ride that line. But the pressure was so huge from the left where he came out and said, no, 99.99% of Alaska, we're going to completely ban. We're going to ban. We had no choice in this whatsoever. We had to do this. I don't believe that's the case, but that's what he's trying to sell.
Right.
And so he can't even move to the middle because when the pressure comes from the left, he can't handle it. So he's going to be all over the place.
Well, and there's part of the problem of playing by the very old handbook. The playbook for the left has been, over the years, until recently, has been, all right, you need to, at some point, you need to move to the middle. Now, usually, that's after the primary. But, of course, no one's going to really primary against him. I mean, I know there's one, but that's not going to happen. And so you try and do that now. I don't know about the timing. I really am curious about that because it's clear that he's trying to become centered. But the problem is with today's far left, you can't ever move to the center. You can't do that. They'll come after you immediately. And you'll hear about it. But he's going to be defiant. And it's going to be the back and forth internally. That's not going to change now or ever with him or any other Democrat that tries to move to the center before an election.
I'm telling you, he was, I don't know if you've heard any of the stuff from yesterday, but
He
was horrible.
Oh, it was bad.
He couldn't get it. He could not get a sentence out.
No.
When he was reading from the teleprompter.
No, it was horrible.
It was one of his worst days yesterday.
Yeah.
And you think about it, and this is the fear that they have. How does he run? And the Democrat, I'm telling you, the one thing that isn't talked about enough is the absolute panic of the Democrats, and I'm talking about the DNC, that how the hell do we get Biden through this election? You can't hide him like you did last time. You know, but the fact is, the only thing they want him to be able to do is walk up, you know, with the helicopter sound in the background and everybody screaming, and whatever, goodbye. And then he turns around and walks away, and then Karine Jean-Pierre the next day, he's answering questions. He answered them yesterday. Everybody knows he's not really answering the questions.
Yeah. Well, and the problem is a lot like what my youngest daughter said to me the other day. We were moving some things around. And, you know, of course, I'm moaning and groaning because I'm aging. And she just says, well, Dad, face it, you're not getting any younger.
Oh.
And she just kind of walks away, leaving me there. Now, that was the worst pain I'd felt all day. And she's right. That's why it's so painful. It's because it's the truth. And the same with Biden, is that it's not going to get any better. It's not going to improve.
No, it's not. No, it was bad yesterday. He couldn't get through. He was reading. He was stumbling.
Oh, it was horrible. It was really horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watched it a couple of times. After the second or third time, I thought, I probably am not going to watch it again. It really is that cringeworthy. It's horrible because in my mind, I go down, you know, the very real concern. I go straight to the real concern of who's making the decisions here.
Yeah, he is.
Because he is commander in chief.
Yep.
And he's just simply not coherent.
No, he's not. And I know they deny it, which, again, makes it so you can criticize him and say he's completely clueless, but there's obviously cognitive problems.
You know, here's the problem for them if DeSantis wins the nomination. If DeSantis does get in and he wins the nomination, he wins the primary over Trump, the debate stage between DeSantis and Biden, if you're on the left, you fear that. Because all of the moments of replay and all of the sound bites and the viral stuff will be because of Biden.
Yeah. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Let's go to Richard in Atlanta. Richard, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Richard.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Listen, I appreciate it that you touched on what I was going to talk about with the COVID thing. You know, this is still a very sensitive sore across America. It's not even began to heal. And I believe if DeSantis... And I appreciate your commentary about him not playing his cards, too. I know he's a calculated fella, and I really like him. And, you know, I voted for Donald Trump twice. I'm going to be a reluctant third timer if I have to be. And I got a lot of friends who feel the same way. But I believe if Ron DeSantis will pound on Donald Trump over his handling of the lockdowns and effectively giving over his presidency to Fauci, you know, knowing what we know now, and maybe, you know, he just gave up.
Yeah, and thank you for the call. It's, you know, I don't know how far it goes. You can say, you know, you can bring up the name Fauci, and you can kind of point to that. I do believe going forward, I think one thing that DeSantis can do is separate himself from not just Trump, but also Biden, and say with Biden, we're going to get to the bottom of it. As long as if I become president, we're going to work every single day to find out how this happened.
Yeah. And look, politically, you know, because Trump attacked, you know, went after DeSantis on COVID, you knew that there was going to be a response. And the response is, I would have fired Fauci. Mm-hmm. Now, understand, Donald Trump was not responsible for lockdowns.
Right.
That came from the governors. And the other thing that I think would be in the real world, it's unfair is, you know, we're looking at COVID now from March of 2023. In when COVID was still increasing. I mean, yeah, there were discussions and Trump was leading the discussion. You know, he was part of, I won't say he was leading it, but he was part of the discussion on where COVID, you know, on where it came from.
Yeah.
But when you look at that, what was going on at that point, it was an attempt to get the vaccines. Trump wasn't responsible for the lockdowns. Now, the advice from the CDC might have been responsible for it, but Trump wanted to open, by the time, you know, we would have gotten to Trump's second term, he would have opened things up quicker. You would not have had the mask mandate as long as you had it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, on airlines that went, you know, for such a long time.
Right.
What, almost 2 years?
Yeah. The eviction moratorium wouldn't have gone as long as it did.
Right. And so I think that it's a little, I think it's politically, yes, because Trump hit him,
yeah,
he's going to hit back. And I think it's very effective to stick to a person who represents a philosophy in politics, which is Fauci. But the truth is, Trump was president for the first 10 months.
Right.
Really, the first, you know, 9 or 10 months of COVID. What we knew then compared to what we know about Fauci is worlds apart. So judging Trump by what we know about Fauci now, you didn't know it back then.
Yeah.
We didn't know it back then.
Right.
So.
Yep. You know, I think most people want to be done with the whole COVID thing, but they also want the truth as to how it started.
And I think the key is you just say, I would have fired Fauci. I would have fired Fauci. I would have fired Fauci. And then you put Trump on the defensive at that point. You know,
yeah.
And that's what you do. Now, whether it's fair or not, and you can say, yeah, but Trump hitting him and saying he was weak on COVID, DeSantis, when that's viewed as his strength, is going to be an awful tough sell. So his response was, you know, boom. But again, I think the last caller, Mike, right? I think it was Mike in Atlanta. You are quite the norm of what I find out there from many Republicans.
Right. Yeah.
When you said you voted for Trump twice, you will vote for him again if you have to.
Right.
But clearly you want DeSantis.
Yeah.
In this time. It's not that you dislike Trump. You want the person who you believe can win. And that's, I think, indicative of probably, I would say, 60% of Republicans right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might be 70.
Mm.
Now, they all know the vulnerabilities of Trump running again. But I think probably 60% are willing to say it publicly, as the last caller did.
Right.
And that's indicative of where the Republican Party is right now. The Democratic Party right now, they're just lost.
Well, and that's, you know, that's what it gets down to. Then it gets down to, all right, state by state. What does the support look like in the primary? You know, I think Trump gains a lot of leverage if he's indicted. But I don't know how long-lasting that will be. It depends on how those cases go. And it also depends on how the campaigns are run.
Does it last for 10 months
right.
or 11 months as we head into the primary
season?
And
that's what it would require.
And that's a great unknown.
Yep.
Giving you 70% each night, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, you think about, I find it fascinating. You and I talk about if you're going to run for president of the United States, you know, what's your plan to do so? I mean, what is your goal? A lot of these candidates know they don't have a chance of winning. So why are they running? What is their point to do it, to raise their profile, whatever? And I think about Nikki Haley and then Ramaswamy, and you know, Nikki Haley has sort of just disappeared completely.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, when she first ran, okay, it was great. I did see an article the other day that was reacting to somebody said, Don Lemon was wrong to say she's not in her prime. I'm like, oh. Okay. Oh, it was Stephen A. Smith from ESPN.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know? He called her first lady. He goes, she's a former first lady. She's a former governor. But
yeah.
And he says, you know, basically, she's a woman. You need to treat her with respect. I'm like, well, that's about a month late.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, did somebody say a rerun or something? did somebody say something else about Nikki Haley? But you just wonder, I mean, when they run and they put together a campaign and you know, they raise money, you just go, well, what's your point? You know, what is your point to get on the debate stage? Is your point to do it? Because you sit there and Ramaswamy, especially every single day, is coming out with stuff that as a conservative / libertarian, you love to see. And I see it every day and I'm like, oh, that's really good, but nobody's noticing. Oh, that's really good, but nobody's noticing. That's an excellent point there. Oh, but nobody is noticing. And so, you know, but he's on social media every single day. Every single day he's on there. But again, is anybody noticing? And then Nikki Haley, the same thing. It's like nothing because everybody knows it's between DeSantis and Trump, and that's what it's going to be.
Right.
But you just wonder, I just wonder the mindset of people, because the only reason I could see if you're Nikki Haley or Ramaswamy is you want to raise your profile for down the road.
I think so, especially for Ramaswamy. You could easily make the case there's plenty of time. He's in his, 37 years old. So there's plenty of time for him to build a career if he wants that, right? To build a name for himself. Don't do what Beto did, which would do just the opposite.
Oh.
But there's a very clear difference in those two individuals. One talks about very real and meaningful things. The other guy just seems to be kind of lost altogether. And Ramaswamy is not interested at all in being a rock star, I don't believe. But he's very charismatic nonetheless and is very passionate about what he believes. I think there is a future for him. I don't know what that looks like. I'm not sure. But I think if he wants to be in American politics and wants to run for office, I think that there is definitely plenty of time for him to make a name for himself.
Oh, I did see. Oh, I got to find the article. It was in Politico. It was definitely in a liberal publication. Mm. It said Democrats panicking that Stacey Abrams may want to run again.
No, I don't know why she would not run again. But interesting that they look at her and now and say, okay, clearly the people, at least in Georgia, have decided. No.
Okay, I have to do this.
Yeah. You have to find out if she's...
No, I put Beto O'Rourke in and Google and then put news to see what he's doing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, not really. There's nothing here. He's not making news at all. Because, Beto O'Rourke's political future in question.
I think it's been in question
for a long
time.
That's from November of last year, though.
Yeah, right. Look, I think if the El Paso district came open again, I think there is a chance that he could go back to that district and run and win. I don't know on a state level. He got close to Ted Cruz. He did as good as he did, I guess, against Ted Cruz because of Ted Cruz. And I think a lot of people had, at that time in Texas, had a bad taste in their mouth from Ted Cruz. Being at the convention in 2016, the whole vote your conscience thing, and a couple of other moves by Ted Cruz that had, I think, Republicans in Texas question whether, you know, that kind of behavior was acceptable. I think that's the only reason that you saw Beto do as well as he did against Ted Cruz. I don't think Ted Cruz has that working against him now in Texas. That's going to be something where if Beto wants to get into, you know, politics at all, he's either going to have to move or go back to his own or his home district of El Paso and run for that seat there. If it comes open,
you know, it's when you think about, because one of the questions we have is who are the rising Democrats. And one of the great questions is nobody has any idea who's a viable candidate for the Democrats right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of it's because of the issues. I mean, you can't discount the issues. You know, one of the things is, you know, remember, that's the Cuomo. I mean, you brought it up the other day, the whole Cuomo thing. Remember the adoration
that's
towards him,
how it
disappears, how you rise to the level of this incredible deity, then fall, and it's like, okay, next. But there is no next. And, you know, Newsom, the whole thing. And then people started saying, well, look, Newsom isn't as strong as you think, because right. the thing that he has to face, yeah, he has the look of what Democrats want, except for the fact he has what Democrats don't want, that he's a white male.
Right.
And
right.
And we're talking about the identity politics they're obsessed with. But we don't believe that's really the case, that Democrats don't want him. We believe it's because this 2024 race will be, if he gets into it, and let's say if he's facing DeSantis, it's definitely, do you wish to be Florida or do you wish to be California? Oh, I did see an article the other day. I'm like, wow, not everybody who moves to Florida is happy that they made the move. Let's talk to some people who made it. This person is upset because they thought they had the job and then the job fell through. Uh-huh. And so they're not happy being in Florida. And then they find out that, housing can be expensive because everybody is moving down here. So it's not all, you know, roses moving down to Florida. And Joe Smith moved to Florida. And it's like, okay, now they're starting to do individual stories.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's how desperate they are.
I saw that in San Antonio. One of the San Antonio newspapers highlighted a family that was moving out of Texas. Oh, we don't like how the state has become. It's basically pointing to the fact that it's a red state. It's like, I'm sorry, how long have you lived here? You know, and trying to counter the whole thing that people are moving to Texas. The numbers show it. And Florida, too. And other states. And that's going to be the case for quite some time. I mean, Arizona, Utah, Texas, Florida. They're gaining in numbers and in big, big numbers for a reason. And it's also not to say that everybody that moves to those states is a conservative, but they move there for the conservative policies that are in place that bring about more jobs,
mm-hmm.
better cost of living, lower taxes. All of those things play into why people go there. Now, they may not vote that way when they get there. We did find, though, remember, it was, I think, the election cycle that Cruz and Beto were in. I think it was 2018 when they found, they did a study that people who moved to Texas
from California, I believe it was, wasn't it?
Were more rigid in their voting for Republicans
yep.
than people that were already here.
Yep.
Yeah, it was from California.
It was from California. I remember that. I remember us talking about that, yeah.
They were more likely to vote Republican than the people that were already here. I don't know how they measured that, you know, versus the people that are already here, because there are plenty of Democrats.
I know there's people that are conservative in California, and there's millions of them, because whenever Eric and I say, yeah, go ahead, do the $5 million reparations in San Francisco. Go ahead, do and they know that they understand the point, but I get it all the time. Shut up, McNamara. Mm-hmm. You guys need to shut up. And then, you know, nice smiley faces. Yeah. They know we don't mean it. We're trying to make a point that, you know, that if you're going, we've seen it. I mean, you look at Portland, Oregon, and you see the situation that they're in. And, you know, there's an article out in the Wall Street Journal about the new prosecutor in Seattle who went after, like, it's a couple of dozen of criminals in Seattle that were constantly committing so many of the crimes. And it was like, you don't let them out of jail. You put them into jail. You put them into jail. She ran on the Law and Order, you know, platform. Mm. But it's what we've said. That's what you do. Because so many of the crimes are committed by a very small number of people who you keep letting out of jail.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'll have that article coming up. It was the Wall Street Journal editorial page that had that. I mean, the solutions are obvious, but they don't want the solutions. And so if they don't want the solutions, it's a legit question to ask. For example, as we did yesterday with San Francisco and the $5 million, you know, that the entire, you know, all the city supervisors, everybody, it was unanimous. Mm-hmm. $5 million reparation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've done the math on it. We've done the math without feelings.
Yeah.
And even tried to do the math with feelings, and there was no difference in how the numbers worked out.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to do. By proposing it, what they are proposing is the complete and total bankruptcy and destruction of the city of San Francisco. But we've realized that makes them feel good, because we don't know. The only reason I can think of, because I can't get into their minds, I look at the motivation of most people. You would only ask for something if you felt so guilty about your own racism, about your own thoughts that bothered you so much, and your conscience was so guilty about you belonging to a political party that wraps itself in identity politics and judging people by groups instead of individuals, that you say, well, the only solution is to propose something that would destroy the city, and therefore that's our act of contrition because of our guilt that we feel because we're a bunch of damn racists.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't figure out what other reason you would propose something that would destroy the city.
Yeah.
We also brought up the possibility that they view that as the ultimate in virtue signaling. Come up with something that will never happen, but you can claim we're willing to destroy our city in order to show our morality, even though it will never happen.
We're willing to sacrifice everything.
Because it's all about imagery anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye, if you'd like to get in quickly to Mike in Missouri. Mike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
How are you doing? My name's Mike. I'm from Missouri.
Yes.
Hey, I was listen to you and talk about the reparations and the perspectives on it. I have a strange one. I live in Missouri. I get a lot of people kick back on this. I say give it to them. And the reason I say that is I'm a middle-class working guy out, up in the middle of the night working. And if they give the reparations out to these communities, middle-class people get a chance to get our hands on some of that money, meaning they might buy cars, they might buy new homes, they might fix air conditioners, just different things like that. You know, I understand it seems odd that we would give people that money. But once again, with the mindset of trying to get it back in the American people's
now,
hands.
All right, we're just limited on time now. You claim you're a conservative?
Yes, sir.
You're not a conservative.
What do you mean I'm not?
Because you're to sit there and say that the reparations, by taking money to for some to give to others, would boost the economy, and you claim you're a conservative, which means you're a conservative on economics and you understand economics. That is impossible. It will always be a drag when you take money from some. You're not creating any wealth. You're simply taking it from some and giving it to others. That's where your flaw is.
Well, the money's going away. We don't see it in our communities. That's all I'm saying. And I am hardcore conservative. I believe in guns, God. I mean,
well, your fiscal mindset is pure socialism, which is not a conservative.
That the government should be in charge of taking people's money, some people's money, and giving it to others.
Right.
That's not a conservative principle in the least.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, we're Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. I feel just a... I don't believe we were too hard on that call. I mean, for example, I will say that I, when the last caller, when I asked him, well, because he had told Alan, our phone screener, that he's a conservative. And so when he talked about the fact that reparations could be good because, you know, you give that money and the people spend that money and it helps the overall economy. And I said, and I tell him, well, you're not a conservative. You could tell he seemed a little bit offended by it. I wanted the shock value there because it's important to have that shock value, don't you think, Eric? When people think that they're a conservative. Now, he said, I'm for God and guns. Okay, that may make you a social conservative. But fiscally, if that's the philosophy that you believe in, that the transfer, that the government taking from some and giving to others is what makes an economy work or makes an economy better, that's purely the propaganda of socialism.
Yeah, that's it. Because then you get into the redistribution of income. Because justifying it by saying, well, look at all the things they could do with the money. That's not a justification. What you're saying is that in the end, it would be great for some people that would get benefits from that money being spent.
Right. And so when you think, and so I know the response would be, well, yeah, but when we fund government, it actually hurts the economy. Well, of course it does. Mm-hmm. Whenever you take money from productive purposes and redistribute it where the goal is not to create more goods and services, yes, you hurt an economy. But we aren't against the constitutional designation of the fact that, yes, taxes are a must. That's part of the cost of doing business. Part of my profit making and your profit making is reduced by the things that are necessary for the cost of doing business, right? The cost of surviving and having a particular quality of life. But it does hurt your bottom line. And so the point is, though, so again, I'm not against taxes. I understand taxes are necessary. I am for a system that the founding fathers set up for a limited federal government. And if you're going to spend money, you do it closer to the actual taxpayers that are paying it, which would be state and local. I think state should have a lot more authority than the federal government does. I think the federal government is way involved in way too much that state should actually be involved in. But no, you're very much like if you are a social conservative, but a fiscal liberal or a fiscal socialist, because a fiscal liberal may just be saying to yourself, well, we just want to spend money to help people. But once you get to the philosophy, as the last caller did, where he says it's good for government to be spending money, because the point he was trying to make for us is it overall helps an entire economy, that's when you get into the socialist propaganda mindset. And that's all we're trying to tell the caller, is that that's what you may not know it, but that's what you're endorsing.
You may be a seminar caller.
You may be a seminar caller who calls up and says, I'm a conservative, and
you
promote
start
something
with that premise.
Right.
And then you promote something very, very liberal.
Right. And we've dealt with that. We've dealt with that before.
Mm-hmm.
But he did seem generally offended, though. I said, you're not a conservative. What?
the idea of the government going in and then saying, because then where would you draw the line if you believe, no, it's okay that they do that because people will just spend the money? Well, if that's the case, then the Treasury should just mail a bunch of large bills to everybody.
Well,
right? Because there is no ill effect.
Well, we're living through the ill effect right now.
Right. But I mean, putting like $1 billion in everybody's account, where would you draw
right.
the line?
Well, but I mean, for the last, and we didn't get a time. I wish I would have held him over and you know, taken the call after the top of the hour to talk more about it, because we're actually dealing with it right now. We're dealing with inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation is a result of government transferring payments from some and giving it to others.
Mm-hmm.
You see the inflation that has caused. Now, the others, you may say, well, who are the others? Taxes haven't gone up. Well, the others are your children and grandchildren. We found the way to legitimize taxation without representation. Tax the unborn.
Well, and it's pretty clear now that the current chair for the Federal Reserve is not serious about inflation. So we're going to have sizable inflation at least through the end of 24, I believe. It's certainly going to be well above the 2% target. So there's really no end in sight in terms of what's going on right now. And think about that. We're looking at the slowdown in new home builds, the permits, a huge slowdown where we are, above the national average, a huge drop. That's going to continue because you're not going to have the interest rates drop. You're going to have them go up, and they're going to stay up. So you're going to tap the brakes on the economy, but not to the extent of getting ahead of inflation, which means we're going to have stagflation. And that's going to likely continue through the end of next year at the very earliest, and who knows for how
right.
long.
So, and to have a microcosm on that of the macroeconomics on this entire thing, ask the average person a year and a half from now, because we're still feeling the effects of all of this. This consistent inflation is the effect of government doing what the last caller was just stating. helping and bailing people out. Ask them if what they got from the government covered the cost of inflation over what will eventually be 3.5 years.
Yeah. Right.
No.
It's a, you know, it really is it, everything that we hear, the same thing. We heard the same thing on the college loan thing. Well, now they'll be able to go spend their money elsewhere.
Yeah, same thing, yeah.
I thought they didn't have the money.
Yeah,
I thought that was the whole point. You know, the argument changes. Well, no, we should give it to the... Okay, well, again, where would you draw the line? Because if you're... If your standards are, look at how they'll spend that money, oh my gosh, then the federal government should fill everybody's bank account and make everybody a billionaire tomorrow. It doesn't work that way because you're looking at one side of it, which is exactly what a liberal does, and doesn't look at where the money comes from. The Fed printing money is not the answer because you're not printing money in order to represent an expansion of wealth, a greater amount of wealth in productivity as a nation. You're doing it to put a Band-Aid on a problem. And ultimately, if the government were going to step in and do redistribution of wealth, which is exactly what this is, where would you draw the line if you're going to justify it by saying, well, look at all the great things they could spend their money on?
Yeah, I mean, it's and either, like I said, and I think you bring a great point, either the caller was a seminar caller, and we've got those before, who say, I'm a conservative, and then promote something that is as liberal as you could possibly get, using the same liberal arguments, or it is part of the old blue dog Democrats that may have been socially conservative but fiscally very liberal that have been attracted to the Democratic Party, or excuse me, to the Republican Party over the last couple of years and view themselves as conservatives. Because I know one of the things that really ticks people off, and I knew that when I told the guy he wasn't a conservative, is it's something that offends people. When they believe they're conservative, they get angry when you tell them they're not. I'm just telling you what the fiscal definition of a conservative is. Whether you agree with it or not, that's what the definition is. Now, there may be a change in that definition over a period of time, but the definition of a conservative when it comes to fiscal matters is still a market-based, somebody who has a market-based mindset and not a Keynesian mindset that it's the government through the government spending that truly helps and drives an economy.
Right.
Because that's been a liberal slash socialist philosophy for the longest time.
Well, you're
going back to Keynes.
In order to apply it, you have to ignore the biggest detrimental effect, 600,000 on the non-recipients
in
San Francisco.
Yes,
what do you think is going to happen when they're hit with that? They're just going to sit there?
Well,
no, the moment this starts moving in that direction on a serious level, they'll be looking for real estate to buy in Texas or Florida.
Oh, yeah.
It's a ghost town.
Look, I'll never forget this went on for probably, what was it, 3, 4, 5 years? Remember the Ron Paul stuff? Where people would call up and say, I'm a libertarian, and I support Ron Paul. And I support Ron Paul because Ron Paul doesn't believe in free trade.
Oh, he was against managed free trade.
And it was like, what
he
do you
didn't
mean?
Like NAFTA,
yeah, he doesn't.
But he believed in open, unmanaged free trade.
And we had, I mean, this was a succession of callers over 5 years. They claimed that they were libertarian and they supported Ron Paul because Ron Paul, did not support free trade because he was against NAFTA. And we had to explain to them. And these people were furious at us. You guys are wrong. We're not wrong. Ron
Paul.
You
only had to go to his website.
Right.
To read it.
Ron Paul believes in
unmanaged free trade.
Unmanaged free trade. He believes that if you were a company in Kentucky, you should be able to deal with whatever country in the world you wish to deal with without any rules and regulations put forth by government. And they were under the mistaken opinion that Ron Paul was for extremely protectionist trade, and it was a complete opposite. And we dealt with that one for 5 years. That that was amazing because we sit there and shake our head. These people would be screaming at us. Right. You guys are wrong. No, we're not.
I got an email after that, and because we basically sent people to, at that time, his website. I got an email saying, I gave the guy $50. And I can't believe I did that because I don't like free trade, and I didn't know this about him. If you're going to be that diligent, or if you're going to be
that
active politically, then I'd probably start at the website.
Yeah, if I'm giving money, I know what the candidate stands for.
Yeah.
No, but that was okay because he called up and he said, okay, thanks. You know, thanks. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I understand that people get busy and they don't do what we do every day, which is study everything, because that's our job, and especially on politics, to know what the definitions are, you know, and until the Democrats choose to change them.
Yeah, right. Again. Yeah, but, you know, the idea of a seminar caller is not lost on us, and in fact, it's very active. It's liberals who want the audience to believe that the conservative hosts are wrong, because conservatives actually support the idea of reparations in the case of, you know, San Francisco.
Because it would overall benefit the economy at large.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
You're not a conservative.
Deeply, deeply flawed theory. You miss out a huge chunk. And that's, well, ask the non-recipients who have to pay $600,000 where they're going to get the money to spend on plumbers, electricians, and all of that.
Yeah, I couldn't.
They won't have it.
By the way, I was doing research. I couldn't figure out the bond solution either, the municipal bond solution.
Because there isn't one.
To finance.
There isn't. There's
$270 billion.
There is not a way to pay for it. There isn't a way to pay for it. Unless they confiscate the assets of corporations within the city, which isn't going to happen.
866-90 Red Eye.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at JJ Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on compliance, safety, accountability. Drivers should be familiar with how their actions affect their motor carrier's compliance, safety, accountability, or CSA score in the 7 basic categories. The driver fitness score is based on the physical and medical qualifications of drivers. The vehicle maintenance category requires drivers to know how to inspect CMVs and secure cargo. Hours of service compliance relies on drivers keeping accurate records of duty and abiding by hours of service limits. The unsafe driving category is affected by unsafe driving behaviors, such as failing to wear a seatbelt or obey traffic laws. Drivers should understand the drug and alcohol prohibitions to prevent hurting their carrier's controlled substances and alcohol basic score. And drivers who transport hazmat must know how to safely transport hazardous materials according to the regulations. The final basic category, crash prevention, is based on how many crashes a motor carrier has been involved in. So drivers must know how to drive safely to avoid crashes. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up, the Fed, Janet Yellen, crime in Seattle. And more here. In fact, success against crime in Seattle. Why? As the Wall Street Journal said, it seems as if fighting crime reduces crime.
What?
Who would have ever thunk it?
Are you kidding me?
How did they end it? Imagine crime falls when you arrest and punish criminals. We'll get to that coming up. I just have to tell you, though, I was on the Drudge Report. I'm just going down through Drudge, and it's like there's a headline, DeSantis launches fiery attack on the Don. So, of course, reading the stories really wasn't fiery. I mean, it was he was asked about it, and he pointed out a couple things. Now, saying he should have fired Fauci earlier may get a fiery response back, but a fiery attack, you know, is you would think it's done with passion and anger, and it was like,
no. I want to hear curse words if you're using the word fiery.
Yes. But so, of course, I click it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no story. You click it, it's just a scowling. There's a picture of just DeSantis with this scowling look on his face, like, that's it.
It's a picture.
There, okay. Right. There is no link to a story. It's just the picture.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, but my first reaction was, come on, give me a story. What are you doing? That's a click. Oh, that's a good clickbait because it got me to laugh.
Yeah, it goes nowhere. But yes. All right.
Yeah, you know, it goes nowhere. More on Congress and the administration. And
more on Congress. What? Which side are we talking about then?
and a Fauci story.
All right.
Fauci story coming up.
All right.
Fourth Branch of Government, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Oh, yeah, we were talking about reparations over the last hour that's going on in San Francisco and in California. So, of course, the question was asked to Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday about where the president stands on reparations.
Where does this administration stand on reparations for slavery and segregation and similar historic wrongs, specifically pertaining to Black Americans?
So look, we understand that there's a legislation on the Hill currently on the study of reparations, pardon me, and we think Congress is the appropriate venue for consideration on such action, and so we're going to leave it there for Congress to decide, to let them go through their process that they're taking at this moment. But I would lay out and speak to what the president.
She didn't answer. She changed the topic. She went on to change the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Because Congress is debating something, the president can't have an opinion on it?
I don't think it's proper for me to comment on things the government is doing. That's actually part of it.
I mean, I would take that in any think time the president says something. Well, Congress is doing legislation on that. Why is the president speaking on that? This is where reporters, especially the, you know, if you work for Fox and you work for Newsmax, if you work for the New York Post, this is where you got to get smarter.
Mm-hmm.
When she sets down, this is the pattern, you've got to destroy that pattern. And the pattern is she'll say when it's to her advantage that, oh, since Congress is dealing with this, we think that's the appropriate place. I didn't ask you where the appropriate place was, because, of course, that would be the appropriate place. But the president has opinions and has consistently expressed opinions of things that Congress is working on. I'm not telling you, I'm not asking you whether the president, through executive order, should approve reparations, because we know he can't do that. What we're asking is, does he support it? Fry your brain!
Yeah, get to the very heart of it very quickly. Don't let her dance around. We think it's inappropriate to be commenting on anything the government is doing.
Yeah, you ask these questions and it will be. And I did see on YouTube the other day, it's like a trailer from, remember the original movie Scanners?
Yeah.
The heads blew up.
Yeah.
It's like.
I love that movie.
Ask her a question. Yeah.
Boom.
You know, if she's going to play, if she's going to play this game with you, play it right back. Because it's easy to tie her up.
Yeah.
To tie her up into just mumbling and bumbling because you can do it.
So if Congress passes it, he'll sign it, right?
So he approves of it.
Yeah. So he'll sign it, right?
Well, wait a minute. Congress worked on that D.C. crime bill that the president, in fact, the president had two opinions on it.
Right.
He first was against what Congress was doing and supported the D.C. crime bill, and then he said he didn't support it. Mm-hmm. So Congress was working at it. He had opinions on both. Why can't the president have an opinion? And he's had an opinion on it all the time that Congress was working on it.
Yeah.
He changed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he pledged here and now to sign it if Congress passes it. Can we get a pledge? Can we get a yes? Is that a yes? It sounded like Hillary. Remember when Hillary was in Canada and they were asking her, and this was during the 2016 election cycle, and they asked her about the Keystone XL pipeline. Well, it's in the courts and blah, 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 and it would be inappropriate. You want to be president. What do you mean it would be inappropriate? If you are to become president,
now
then what would you do? Sorry. My stomach became unsettled when I said that. But that's why you asked that question. And, of course, you can't, in that setting, Jean-Pierre's not going to be able to answer that because inevitably then, okay, where would you cap it? How's it to be paid for? Then again, how are you going to pay for the whole student loan thing?
Well, we know why she won't answer the question. In the latest polling, 70% of Americans against reparations, 30% for. Now, that's just the generic question.
Mm-hmm.
The only correct poll would be, and I guess you could do two polls, separate polls. People that would get the reparations, ask them if they would want the $5 million without having to pay anything for the reparations. I can tell you what that survey would be.
100% yes.
Yes, 100% yes. So you can do both polls. The people that will get reparations will get $5 million plus $97,000 for 250 years, their debts wiped out, and a home for $1. Are you for reparations? And then you can see 100% yes. But the key is to ask the people who would be paying for it, ask the same question. These are the reparations that they would put forward. Do you support your family taking out a first, second, and third mortgage for $600,000 to pay for the reparations? That would be 100% no.
Exactly.
Unless it, not, no, I don't want to say that. It wouldn't be 100% no, because everyone knows that it's not going to happen and therefore it's not binding. You would have someone who wishes to virtue signal and say, oh, yes, I'd be willing to do it. So 99-1.
I should give up everything, and you could do that if you were confident that it wasn't going to happen.
Right.
Oh, I'm willing to give up everything.
So the poll could only be accurate if you answered, yes, I'm for reparations, then you would have to pay $600,000.
Yeah, right.
It's a tough poll to do. Now, you can do it when it's a generic poll. You for
well,
reparations?
Now, here's also the next question. Do you support a tax on multimillionaires?
That's exactly.
Right. When exactly would that kick in? Because look, this is the same Liberal Party. They want to go after the rich. But you're also wanting to create a whole new set of multimillionaires. Yeah, but we'll make sure that certain people are exempt. So the recipients of the reparations would be exempt from taxes. That's how you get around that. Well, wait a minute. To one of our previous caller's points, what if they went out and, spent it all in one place? Multi-million dollars in one place, and you start seeing that, that person was not a recipient, but indirectly they received the benefit of those millions of dollars. Now they're going to be taxed. That's how it would work if it were to happen, which it's not going to happen.
This crime and consequences in Seattle. And didn't hear much about this, but sometimes, as we said, the Wall Street Journal opinion page in their opinions actually tell you a story that really isn't being covered much.
This is my favorite show on NBC, by the way. Crime and Consequences in Seattle.
Hi, I'm your talk show host, Fraser Crane.
Yeah.
Let's talk about crime and consequences in Seattle.
I think Ice-T is in that, right?
Yeah. Policy news flash. Fighting crime reduces crime. Latest evidence come from Seattle. Of all places where City Attorney Ann Davidson's efforts are showing results. She took office in January of 2022 after voters elected her on a law and order platform. She has focused on the 168 troublemakers responsible for the disproportionate amount of crime, nearly 3,500 misdemeanors in Seattle over a five-year period from those 168 people. They each averaged 6.3 misdemeanor criminal incidents referred to prosecution in Seattle in a year.
Wow.
The most common crime were theft to buy fentanyl or meth, which often led to more serious charges such as assaults and robbery if someone attempts to stop them, the Seattle City Attorney's Office said in a new report. But new numbers show that on Ms. Davidson's watch, the number of annual misdemeanor referrals by this group has dropped from 6.3 to 2.7. What changed? We'll start with arrests and punishment. In the past year, 142 of those 168 criminals were behind bars at some point. King County jails had limited bookings for most misdemeanors, but last spring, Ms. Davidson brokered an agreement to make an exception for Seattle's most prolific misdemeanor criminals. She also pushed through reform that excludes from Seattle's notoriously lenient community court anyone who had 12 or more charges referred to the city attorney for prosecution over the past 5 years, including one in the past 8 months. Their cases are now handled by the municipal court, where they can face bail requirements and jail time. Ms. Davidson has persevered despite criticism from Seattle's progressives, but the facts vindicate her approach. Imagine crime falls when you arrest and punish.
Yeah. Gee.
Oh, and let me add, the criminals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you're saying is, and that's, you know, these are the things that have to happen. But then you point to a prosecutor like Bragg and others in other major cities that are intent on people not going to jail. And if they go to jail, not staying in jail. Jails are overcrowded. Let's let everybody go. Let's not fill them up even more. And the more you do that, the more you enact that kind of policy, the more you'll see a massive rise in crime. And that's exactly what's happening. I'm glad that's going on in Seattle, that they're very, and it's interesting, you look at the number of people that are responsible. You know, it seems like a small number, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Responsible for a great deal of crime in the Seattle area. I love the fact that they've done the police work there. The prosecutor is very, very proactive here in doing what should be done in every city and town in America. And we can make this choice whether to do it or not. We made the choice to not do it in major cities, and we're seeing the results of it. All these choices that we've made, we can change.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. See where this goes. During a portion of an interview aired on Tuesday's edition of PBS American Masters, Dr. Fauci argued that there are a number of experiments that need to be done on viruses that would require doing something under certain circumstances that make a pathogen more transmissible or more pathogenic, which some people refer to as gain of function, end of quote. Is he attempting to set a new narrative?
Interesting. Building a defense out in some way? I don't know.
Muddying the waters?
Some kind of diversion?
I've always been for this. I never denied it.
Right. Sounds like Barney Frank. I was never for people buying homes. But
this is really good. We have a really interesting next year and a half.
Well, because
I wish you could like take the next 6 months and condense it down to tomorrow, what all the news is going to be.
Oh my gosh.
That would make my day.
Well, because you look at that and I could actually see him testifying before Congress and saying, "Well, no, I wasn't against gain of function." You know, and he's going to do the same thing that he's done before. He's going to move the goalposts every time. Well, that's not what the definition is. I understand that some people are calling it that now. But if you want to call it that, then okay, you can call it that now. But that's not back then when he can just sit and run in circles.
I was waiting to where you were. I'm sitting here waiting, where's he going to go next? And then you stopped. But I was fascinated by how you were going.
Because it's like where you were going. A I know. Chicken. You're never going to be able to just reach down and pick it up and get hold of it because he's going to talk in circles.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.